Welcome to NatureBacked Podcast, where we are speaking about the green future with entrepreneurs and investors from around the world. My name is Tarmo Virki, and today my guest is Kenny Kaluichi, a carbon expert who has been working in the industry for several years. Welcome, Kenny, to the show. You've been around quite a lot. Tell in short what you are doing these days in the carbon space.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Tamil. It's a real opportunity, and I take that very seriously and not lightly. Just to be included in your podcast and your platform as well. I've been doing quite a lot of things, you know. Currently, I'm working a lot on the carbon side, trying to focus on the EU ETS, but also on that's on the compliance side, and also I've been working pretty much trying to advise companies, for example, Airbonics, you know, from Estonia, that are doing afforestation. And I've been advising those guys. They're pretty much on the advisory side. That's where I think today I am, on the carbon market side, both on the compliance and also advisory on the voluntary carbon markets here. Apart from that, I'm also running, you know, a venture tech village in Africa, and that means I'm trying to see how we can drive more women into tech in Africa. So giving a lot of opportunities to women to actually join this platform that I'm building. And we're targeting really, really women leadership into this platform within IT. You know, that's economic inclusion, but also social inclusion as well. There's a huge gap of women not in tech. And I think that also contributes to, you know, the retardation of growth in Africa, yeah.
When you're developing a carbon credit project, you need to go obviously through Gold Standard or Verra, and you know, in there is like a PDD that you need to, you know, make sure that you fill in. And I think now my question is on the impact of that PDD, right? So there is, you know, on the Gold Standard, you know, assessments, it's like you need to meet gender sensitivity, and your project has to include more women to the project, which is great, and you know, creating jobs, you know, so they need to tick at least three SDGs with, you know, obviously the climate, the creation of jobs. I think most of these $10 million projects, there's only 10 jobs that are created in that place. Only 10 jobs out of this huge project, $10 million, you know, emissions reduction project, right? So we don't see those. I think those numbers are less, and I would love to see if Gold Standard could really push that envelope to measure that. The reason, you know, if the project X has 10 million, they should create at least, you know, even 100 plus jobs or 200 jobs, you know. But most of these, you know, are like permanent roles. It's like very, you know, freelancing approach into job creation that actually creates permanent jobs. So definitely women included in these jobs as well. And you know, I think that's really critical to, you know, to make sure that you bring equity, right? Because the money obviously comes back to Europe, but then, you know, only 10 people were recruited out of the $10-15 million project. I don't find that very fair, right? So
absolutely.
I definitely want to see more numbers on job creation. Obviously, there's a substantial, you know, in terms of like emissions reduction, I think that actually works. But with the job creation and those other SDGs, I think there should be, you know, a benchmark to say you need to make sure that there is a substantial number there than just creating five jobs out of the $20 million projects. So yeah, I think that's what I wanted to kind of like reflect on. I think it's I love the Gold Standard mechanism here.
The thing I remember hearing from someone then that the classical carbon project is that it's a 20-80 project where 20% goes to original, you know, either the land or the people or the where it's actually the value is created. And 80% is going to all the middlemen in the chain who are creating the projects, paying for the projects, delivering the credits. That sounds really unfair.
Yeah, you're right. You know, I don't definitely, it's a right observation, Tamil. I don't get it as well. It's very unfair. I think most of the people that develop projects should get more, obviously. But also people that are investing in the project should actually have something, right? But I think the problem is that value chain, which is very complex when you're getting these carbon credits, right? Yeah. All these kind of people that are doing verification, validation, which is actually very important. But everyone is getting a cut from that, right? And then the broker gets about 20 to 25%, you know, in the revenue share model. And then, you know, by the time, like you said, right, only like a very minimal number of revenues that goes back to the people that actually build these projects. So I think that is a little bit unfair. I would definitely agree with you. I don't find that to be, a very sustainable approach in how this market should move. I think if we want to create impact, we should definitely focus on project developers, whether we want to take out poverty, creating impact.
A lot of the revenues in the carbon industry are staying with the kind of with the chain, but the which would make a lot of sense, because in a way it's as you were saying, transparency is the key in this industry, and it's really, for me, the carbon industry challenge is really a lot about trust. So if you have a kind of if you need to build that trust, it's kind of logical that there are costs related and so on, that if we would go all directly to the person on the ground saying that I planted those trees here, can I get my money for those carbon savings created, it would be even more complicated. But how do you see this kind of the trust challenge of this industry?
Yeah, good observation there. I mean, the challenge is it's humongous, right? It's a very big challenge. Trust, obviously, it's something that you need to benchmark, especially if you're gonna go into a market to buy credits, but also, talking to developers, right? There's been a lot of scamming over time, and that obviously, if you're a corporate company, there's a lot of reputational risk, right, to get involved directly. So I think this is why maybe, like you say, the brokers in between, this huge value chain in between, the buyer, the project owner, and also the eventual buyer, there's a lot of middlemen there that are pretty much trying to get a cut, and then another one, and but trust. So what we are seeing, obviously, in that view is that the brokers are creating the trust with the project developers, but and then the corporate companies, obviously the end buyers are trusting that the brokers, they have done the right thing, they've done the due diligence process on obviously the project itself, and then they're able to trust. So they obviously they're creating the trust link there between the buyer and the project developer. This is why you see there's a lot of people in that value chain that are trying to get something out of it, right? So being a trust, obviously there's a reason opportunity to build a trust based market model directly with project developers, right? You definitely need to have people in the team. I think what I've seen most of the companies that are buying, they do not have people that could actually really focus on procuring these carbon credits, right? You might be sustainability manager, and then you're really overworked with other things, on your plate. So this is why you're trying to say, hey, I'll just definitely go to the buyer, to the broker, and then the broker can fix this for us, right? But I think that has to change. I think if there is teams, within corporate companies or end buyers, to make sure that they are really focused on, I mean, it could be people in the procurement department there or supply chain department that could be trained, obscured to make sure that they're actually going in and actually purchasing directly from the project developers. That could help, obviously, the project developers so that they don't give away 25% of their project to brokers, and then the brokers are getting some commission from the corporate companies. So you see how the money actually goes off, like disappears, because there's just so many middlemen in this market. And I wouldn't subscribe to that one. I think companies could build trust, but building trust, obviously, it's creating the culture of trust, between the price that you want to buy in, or and also understanding pretty much doing the pretty much proper due diligence on those process project directly than going through a broker, right? And I mean, there's always risk as well, like reputational risks with buying through a broker as well, right? It's not everything is it's glittering gold.
Of course.
There is reputational risk that is involved with brokers as well. And we've had so many of these things, oh, we bought carbon credits and then 90% were not actually accurate. All these kind of things, will definitely happen in the market. But I think what's I think the future of carbon credits, I think with that, overview that you've just shared is companies buying, building a trust-based model with project developers directly. But you definitely need to set up an infrastructure for that. It's not easy, but once you do that, there's going to be that, way where companies, projects, project developers could actually leverage on that revenue than splitting that across 10, 15 people that are involved in that chain. Yeah. So I think that could actually be the base model, trust-based model, but directly with project developers. Yeah. I think I'll definitely go for that one. Thanks for the middleman out.
Over the last year or so, we've seen a lot of big media outlets unveiling the overblown carbon estimates of mostly Verra, but probably in general the carbon industry. How do you see these reports? How have they? What has been their impact? I mean, I think from one side it's clear that it is hitting the already fragile trust in the industry. From the other side, it's clear that you kind of need media to break the bubble anyway.
Yeah, that's a very hot one, Tamil, right? It's a great overview. It's a great observation there. I think everybody sees that, right? I think it's lack of transparency, and that volatility of the market itself, that obviously causes that volatility of the market. And with all these controversies, I think that actually harms the market more. I know it's just like sort of injury here. It's just it doesn't give the market a great impression. I think it also scares a lot of people and companies to actually buy into this market, right? Because it's just so much risk there. There's a reputational risk, there's a liquidity risk. You might actually lose out money if you actually bought carbon credits worth $3-4 million, right? And then those were actually not legit. And I don't think there's a lot of insurance involved in that, or underwriting for those purchases. Eventually you lose out on money, because then you bought credits that were not actually validated, that were not legit. So I think there is that controversies that are happening within the market. Obviously we saw the big one with Vera, 90%, which was a red plus, obviously that one, I saw it coming in a way. I saw it coming. Red Plus project, they need rebranding. I don't think it's more biodiversity, right? If you look at Red Plus, you're increasing biodiversity. You definitely want to do to make sure that those trees are not cut down by farmers or people that are trying to leverage from that to make a living. It's more biodiversity. We're serving biodiversity. I would look into Red Plus to be more rebranded into biodiversity credits, because the Red Plus itself, I think, because that was like the biggest, and that actually what is what actually brought that controversy, right? With Vera 90%, definitely, even when they're trying to fix the methodologies and everything, I don't think Red Plus should actually continue to exist as Red Plus projects. I think more biodiversity. The trees are there. You can't prove, if those trees are going to be cut and what kind of emissions. And I don't subscribe to Red Plus projects. Yeah, but I think with that, if there's change in that direction, where there could be rebranding and also trying to see what is actually real and how to make sure that we give the right methodologies to the right things, then avoided emissions for me, there's still a lot of question marks on that. So I think that brings a lack of trust in the market, lack of transparency, obviously, and obviously it's going to hit the market so hard. Yeah.
The future and the biodiversity and the kind of link between the carbon and the biodiversity are really interesting. We'll continue the discussion after those short messages from our sponsors. Welcome back, Kenny. We were stopped when we were talking about the biodiversity and carbon credits and Red Plus programs. Do you think the biodiversity will become part of carbon projects, or will we see the totally independent biodiversity credit market emerging?
Great question. I think I would definitely want to see the biodiversity credit market actually emerging. We scrap off REDD Plus and make sure that we protect obviously the trees that are still standing today, and also the life in those trees, right? Now the biodiversity in those trees, the species, and I think that should actually be that market should actually be the rising market and something that actually could actually bring a lot of trust as well in the market. We can't cut trees, obviously. That's the no-brainer. I think obviously we should plant more trees and also save the trees that we have today. But obviously, no, there is carbon sequestration in that, carbon capture, obviously the trees that are today, but also planting more trees as well, right? I think that's going to be very cheap. With biodiversity market, I think carbon credit market, I think I'll definitely up for that one to see how that could actually grow. And with a very, very also making sure that it's a very liquid market as well for these type of credits. I would definitely vouch for biodiversity credit than avoided emissions credits, right? It's that is really key. So we need to make sure that nature survives
Absolutely.
and protecting that nature and across not just in Brazil but across the world. I think that's going to be very key. But I think the biodiversity, but a very sound and very thriving market for biodiversity market credit market, I think that's going to be very important. Yeah, I see that. Hopefully that could be pushed so hard than pushing REDD Plus and all these kind of things. Like I said, rebrand REDD Plus to biodiversity and then push the and I'll make the market a little bit more liquid. Yeah.
Do you think, or what could be the biggest lessons for this emerging biodiversity market from carbon market? I mean, I think it will have the very similar challenges as carbon market with the trust questions and probably if we will have a separate obligatory and voluntary markets, we will definitely see on a voluntary market a lot of how would I say weird projects where everything is clearly not right when somebody looks under the hood.
Yeah, I mean it's a good one, good question. I mean I think this is where we set up the safeguards, right? I think we see the Integrity Council. I think I really like that organization. The Integrity Council on Voluntary Carbon Markets. These are people that would ensure that they set up the right, guardrails on, this emerging market, obviously, carbon credit market for biodiversity. I think if that is done by very legit. Organization like the Integrity Council for Voluntary Carbon Markets, that actually brings a lot of trust, right? I think if this is something that these guys from by for the Integrity Council take hands on and say we can actually create this market to actually thrive, we might avoid things that we've seen, like you said, right? Lack of transparency, scams, but also technology is going to be very critical to this market for biodiversity. And I see like blockchain, obviously, satellites, tracking GIS systems, where we actually see the forest thriving and ensuring that we actually set up safeguards, to make sure that, it's actually legit. And also there's a process of due diligence on whatever projects that we develop for biodiversity. Yeah. But, eventually biodiversity should actually benefit, local communities. And I think that's the view, right? I think we, most of the companies that are trading or trying to go into markets, I think they get, like we discussed already, part of the bigger chunk of the revenues. And then people that are local, they don't actually get, they pretty much get nothing, right? So I think we'd love to see that the biodiversity, say in Brazil, those tribes that are living in those areas where they need to protect the trees, they're really, really, compensated, to make sure that they have a thriving economy around them. And it's not just, oh, we have this forest and then the money comes back to Europe or goes back to, to the US or other places. I think we want to see more. If we are protecting a forest, we should definitely ensure that, those credits that are there for biodiversity, most of it actually benefits the local people, right? I think I'll definitely argue for that one, So I think let me just conclude on that one. I say the Integrity Council for Voluntary Carbon Markets, very important organization. If they set the guardrails, for making sure that this market can thrive and avoid these, controversies that we've, gone through over the years. I think the market for biodiversity could be a really thriving and bullish market. Yeah.
Should we have a separate integrity council for biodiversity?
Good question. Good question. I know there's a lot of organizations on biodiversity. But there could be that approach as well. W is a WEF. They have pretty much been driving this biodiversity, obviously, to make sure that they some of the projects monetize from that. There could be not really a separate one, but I think with the experience on the carbon market side, there could be like a blend of, the biodiversity market, but also like the very core carbon market as well, to kind of like, with the Integrity Council, for example, to make sure that they build methodologies and, they build guidelines on how this market should actually play, right? Or should be. I think there could be like a blended one, because there's both experience on the carbon side, but also, on the biodiversity experts, like, WEF. I think that could be actually be great to have that blend of, organizations trying to build, a system, to make sure that the market actually can thrive, and yeah.
We started off discussing a little bit about villages and getting the local support systems in place and the local to help the local communities to thrive. So I think I think probably the key for both the biodiversity and the carbon side is the actual actual benefit of the local people.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think I think the focus right now obviously is carbon finance, right? So places where, from the global north, to the global south, we need to see that, but also making sure that those local people actually benefit from these projects, and they get a big chunk of the revenues, within that the realm. Yeah. So I think that's going to be very key to make sure that it's actually the local people benefiting more. Because that's when we check those boxes, right? For impact, for sustainable development. And I think this is why this is actually set up, the whole market, mechanism is that, there is sustainable development, obviously with mitigation of CO2 emissions in that process as well. So I think, and that includes biodiversity, but also the carbon market side as well, that the local people should actually be the winners and not, if we really make it a little bit more, transparent that, there is pricing and all these kind of things like that, are more visible. I think we'll see a great market space for both, carbon, emissions credit market, but also the, biodiversity credit market as well. I like, for example, with a fair price, fair trade. I don't know if you know about this organization. Yeah, they have very good prices, right? You can see that the mechanism on, fair trade pricing on carbon. Now, which is a commodity, it's actually great. It benefits 10% out of the whole, transactions when you split. Still goes back to the project owner, right? That's actually great. You see that level of, price structuring that actually benefits the project owners. I think, I would definitely encourage that people actually buy from those types of, if you really want to buy carbon credits, fair trade, it's very critical to make sure that it actually benefits people that actually build the project, the project owners. And that pricing, a lot of people actually don't know, it's a really good price, because then, it's the money goes back, most of it, to the project that developers, the local people, the local communities that need to benefit from that trade here.
We'll continue the discussion after those short messages from our sponsors. Welcome back. As we are trying to slowly start to wrap up the discussion, going back to your core know-how and the key your core background, the carbon markets. We have we have the European ETS, we have other local ETS things popping up, as you said, in a number of places in China and California and maybe somewhere else. And then we have this totally wild, wild west, voluntary carbon market. How do you see the kind of pricing on those markets developing? I think in the early days of the European ETS market, it was easy to say that, you know, from this 5-year level, the prices will only increase, and everybody who was in that market was, you know, taking long positions and benefiting for years from those positions. But what about now? I mean, where is the ETS trading now in late January of the 2024?
Good question. Yeah, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, that you know the ETS program has actually produced a lot of results over time. You know, with emissions reduction within the EU, with the pricing, I think that's a really great question, right? You know, the pricing obviously it's market based.
Of course.
But we see, you know, with the pricing. That actually goes with regulation, right? It's kind of like, you know,
True.
parallel with, you know, goes hand in hand with regulation. Fit for 55, for example, you know, I think that's actually a really great regulation there, regulatory too, that would drive the pricing up again. So I think over time in the you know, within the ETS program, especially for the EU, we see that the regulatory framework actually drives the pricing up. So the more they actually, you know, try to reduce allocations, the prices are going to be very high, and we'll see, you know, over time, 2030 carbon credit, you know, emissions, the ETS pricing going to $200 per ton, right? You know, and now they're bringing in new, you know, industries like, you know, the maritime sector as well, shipping that will actually be, I think they have already started this from this year, January this year, you know, so we see that, right? I think there's going to be a lot of, you know, industries and sectors that are going to be affected by the ETS program or be, you know, included in the ETS program. But I think the question of the pricing is driven by regulation, right? It's something that the EU is really, really strict on. And I think they have really nailed on that pricing mechanism that, you know, they over time it's going to be increasing as the regulation actually, you know, new regulatory policies of, you know, tools actually pops up, yeah. So I think with that regulation and pricing, I think the EU market, you know, price is gonna go a little bit higher, and we don't see that obviously in the VCM, right? It's a worldwide race, as you call it. So, but yeah, you know, with the ETS, I think it's very structured market. The pricing is really driven by regulation, and we see more regulation coming, and the pricing also going up as well. So yeah. So if you are affected, you know, one of the sectors within the ETS program, the price is actually going to go up. But we also want to see the same for the VCM market, right? But it has to be really structured, more visible, you know, visibility, transparency, you know, and also avoiding these volatile risks as well. Yeah.
In some of the early episodes of NatureBacked, I've already pitched, I think, the idea that if I would have, I don't know, 10 or 100 million fund, I would probably buy up the ETS or one of the carbon credits this year and sell them at 2029 when everybody's trying to, you know, reach their 2030 targets.
Yeah, did you discuss that already from the earlier episode?
I think I've you know, suggested in the early episodes already to the audience that to me it would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, but I think it's a very structured market, you know, to get a trading account, you know, you know, when you want to transfer allocations or, you know, these allowances that they give. You know, it's a very structured market, right? It's not an easy process as well, you know, just
So
to get that
maybe it's easier to
license.
do it on a voluntary side then.
Yeah, I think on with your ambitions and your, you know, your vision there at the voluntary side makes a lot of sense. But we've seen also some of the funds, you know, that are really working very hard on the ETS side. I think they've done pretty well. I know one fund, I think from the UK, that is actually doing so well with over 400 million, you know, serving the ETS market. You know, market value there. Yeah.
So, Kenny, as we're wrapping up here, what's your kind of big goal for 2024?
Great question. Thank you so much for having me. I very much appreciate it. Yeah, 2024. I think definitely I would definitely want to launch my project, you know, for social inclusion. with Women in Tech in Africa, the
Mm.
platform that I've built. So we're launching that in Namibia, in Windhoek. So I'm really excited to make sure that we get more women and more girls, to do internship programs and to get started, right? And these are things that I really focused on this year to make sure that we drive women leadership in Africa within tech to get the space that they know they deserve. And over time, I think I definitely want to work with a lot of companies, advising companies on, compliancy, truth and transparency. So I think, I definitely want to work around the truth market where I can spend some time to help companies if they want to look into, buying credits or, trying to get that trust from companies that I know that are actually doing a great job on this market in terms of, the impact, but also, the emissions reduction, like, impact on economic inclusion, on pricing and affordability of, local communities. I'm very much focused on looking to that picture than just getting the revenues. So I definitely want to help a lot of companies to understand, on the compliance side, but also the truth and also the transparency side. Yeah, that's my goal this year.
Thank you so much, Kenny, for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Tamo. Great podcast and keep going. I love it.
Welcome to Sara Talk Solutions. Ladies and gentlemen, you've tuned into a bit of a different type of show. I'm Sara B and I'm your host. You can find me on my IG, which is Aussie_Sara_LA. I talk about amazing, relevant conversations and topics and what functions that goes on in this magical, wonderful, wonderful city of the City of Angels. My IG, which is Aussie_Sara_LA.
Electric acid. Electric acid.
Welcome to Tuning In to Sound Wellbeing, where we harmonise your mind, body and soul. I'm Amanda, your sound therapy expert.
And I'm Stephen, the curious explorer uncovering the mysteries of sound.
Together we explore vibrations, frequencies, and the power of sound therapy and tuning forks.
Discover ancient wisdom, reduce stress, and tune into a healthier life. Subscribe to Tuning Into Sound Wellbeing today.
Electric acid.